কুঞ্জ বিহারে, গোপী জনাবল্লভ গিরিবর ধারে, যশোদ নন্দন ব্রজ জন রঞ্জন, যশোদানন্দন ব্রজ জন রঞ্জন, যমুনা তীরবন চারি, যমুনা তীরবন চারি, জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারে, জয় গোপী জনবল্লভ গিরিবর ধারে, যশোদানন্দন ব্রজ জন রঞ্জন, যমুনা তীরবন চারি, যমুনা তীরবন চারি, জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারে, জয় গোপী জনবল্লভ গিরিবর ধারে, যশোদানন্দন ব্রজ জন রঞ্জন, যমুনা তীরবন চারি, জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারে, জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারে,
জয় ওম বিষ্ণুপাদ পরমহংস পরিব্রাজকাচার্য অষ্টোত্তরশত শ্রী শ্রীমদ হিজ ডিভাইন গ্রেস এসি ভক্তি বেদান্ত স্বামী শিল প্রভুপাদ কি জয়, অনন্ত কোটি বৈষ্ণব বৃন্দ কি জয়, গ্রন্থরাজ শ্রীমদ ভাগবতম কি জয়, অল গ্লোরিজ টু দি অ্যাসেম্বলড ডিভোটিস, অল গ্লোরিজ টু দি অ্যাসেম্বলড ডিভোটিস, অল গ্লোরিজ টু শ্রী শ্রী গুরু অ্যান্ড গৌরাঙ্গ। ওম নমো ভগবতে বাসুদেবায়, ওম নমো ভগবতে বাসুদেবায়, ওম নমো ভগবতে বাসুদেবায়, গ্রন্থরাজ শ্রীমদ ভাগবতম ক্যান্টো ফোর চ্যাপ্টার 29 টেক্সট 83। এতদধ্যাত্ম পারোক্ষম গীতম দেবর্ষিনানঘ, यद् श्रावयेद्य शृण्यात् सलिङ्गेन विमुच्यते एतदध्यात्मपारोक्षम् गीतं देवर्षिणा नघः यत् श्रावयेद्य शृणुयात् सलिङ्गेन विमुच्यते एतदध्यात्मपारोक्षम् गीतं देवर्षिणा नघ यश्रावयेद्यः शृणुयात् सलिङ्गेन विमुच्यते यश्रावयेत्यश्रुणुयात् स लिङ्गेन विमुच्यते एतदध्यात्मपारोक्ष्यं गीतं देवर्षिणा नघ यश्रावयेद्य शृणुयात् स लिङ्गेन विमुच्यते एतदध्यात्मपारोक्षम् गीतं देवर्षिणा नघ यश्रावयेद्य शृणुयात् स लिङ्गेन विमुच्यते लेडीस् प्लीस् एतदध्यात्मपारोक्षं गीतं देवर्षिणा नघ यश्रावयेद्य शृणुयात् स लिङ्गेन विमुच्यते एतदध्यात्मपारोक्षं गीतं देवर्षिणा नघ यश्रावयेद्य शृणुयात् स लिङ्गेन विमुच्यते एतत् This Adhyatma, spiritual, Paroksham, authorized description, Gitam, narrated, Devarshina, by the great sage Narada, Anagha, O spotless Vidura, Yaha, anyone who, Shravayet may describe Yaha, anyone who Shnuyat may hear Saha, he Lingena from the bodily concept of life Vimuchyate becomes delivered. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. My dear Vidura, one who hears this narration concerning the understanding of the living entity's spiritual existence, as described by the great sage Narada, or who relates it to others, will be liberated from the bodily conception of life. Purport. This material creation is the spirit soul's dream. Actually, all existence in the material world is a dream of Mahavishnu, as the Brahma Samhita describes. Yakaranarnavajale bhajati smayoga nidram ananta jagadanda saroma kupaha. This material world is created by the dreaming of Mahavishnu. The real factual platform is the spiritual world. But when the spirit soul wants to imitate the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is put into this dreamland of material creation. After being in contact with the material modes of nature, the living entity develops the subtle and gross bodies. When the living entity is fortunate enough to associate with Sri Narada Mahamuni or his servants, he is liberated from this dreamland of material creation and the bodily conception of life. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhya Evacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We are at the final few verses of this chapter. And starting from this verse, Maitreya Rishi is giving blessings. A benediction. He's telling us, Vidura and us, what is the outcome? What do we get from hearing Narada Muni's narration of this allegory to King Prachina Barhishat? And what's the potency in Narada Muni's instructions? So that benediction is in the last line, Sir Lingena Vimuchyate. One is freed from the bodily conception of life. Oh, fantastic. Our whole problem is that we have a bodily conception of life. I and mine. Everything is in terms of I and mine. And to be freed from that is impossible. This morning we were hearing Prabhupada on the altar, and Prabhupada was quoting this same phrase in reference to Daivi Hi Esha Gunamayi verse from Bhagavad Gita, that it is impossible for any living entity to become freed of the bodily concept of life. It's impossible. The only way it is possible, if there is any possibility, is through this way, is to hear the narrations given by Narada Muni, to hear about this allegory. And there's another piece to it. Yashrunuyat is one who is eager to hear this. Yashravayet is one who is also eager to narrate this to others. So the enthusiasm to narrate it is that this topic must be discussed among devotees, even among people. When this topic is discussed, by speaking it and by hearing it, one becomes freed from bodily concept of life. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes the same phenomenon a little differently. He doesn't speak of it from the perspective of bodily conception of life, but he speaks it from what energizes devotees. Matchita madgada prana bodhayantascha parasparam Kathayantascha mam nityam tushyanticha ramanticha. That devotees, for them, they only think about me all the time. Madchitta, madgata prana. That their whole life is dedicated to me. And so, they, Prabhupada says, preach to each other. Bodhayantascha parasparam. And this is our duty. We should preach to each other. Preaching is not just for, you know, those people who we feel are entangled in the quagmire of material existence. We usually call them karmis. Yavanas, mlecha, like that. But that's not it. Preaching is done to each other, to strengthen our convictions. We have to preach to each other to strengthen our faith in Guru, in Krishna, in the process of bhakti. Very important to preach to each other. We shouldn't think, oh, I'm not qualified, I'm not senior, I cannot preach. No, among all relationships there is preaching. Especially among peers and friends, we're all serving together. We should preach to each other, Prabhu, this is not okay, that's not okay, this is my realization, this is what I've read from Bhagavad Gita. Not heartlessly, not taking Shastra to be a stick and beating each other up. You know, in Sanskrit, Shastra and Shastra, both are the same spelling in English, but the pronunciation is different. Shastra means scripture, and Shastra means weapon. So oftentimes we use Shastra as Shastra, we use it as a weapon to beat each other. Prabhu, Prabhupada says, you're a muda, so you shouldn't behave like this. This is not preaching. Preaching means inspiring, enthusing. People should become happy to hear from us. The devotees should become happy. Oh, this is very nice. This Prabhu is helping me. He's helping me see things properly. And we should also carry that mood that someone is giving us good instruction. The first thing should not be, really? What about you, Prabhu? We're happy to receive. Happy to receive some drop of enlightenment from each other. Because there is benedictions in these potent words of Krishna or Narada Muni here. Prabhupada says, fortunate enough to associate with Sri Narada Mahamuni or his servants. And we are all in that line of servants of Sri Narada because that's our disciplic succession. So we associate with each other through our exchanges. I'm personally missing Jai Jagannath Prabhu's association. So I remember him. I remember what he says in class, and that's my association with him. I'm likewise, I'm sure he's sitting there thinking about all of us. Or you know, I was just thinking about Prabhula Madhuri and Sri Gauranga Prabhu. I hope they are watching online. I miss them. And other devotees that we associate with regularly. So this benediction, a couple of things. One is I want to spend some time on the bodily conception of life. This is the greatest bane of material existence. The bodily conception of life. And as practicing devotees, our important goal is to become freed from this bodily conception of life. Our method to approach this is not that we are obsessed with, I am the bodily conception of life. Am I in the bodily conception of life right now? Am I free of it? That's an obsession. Not like that. The freedom from bodily conception comes when we have a service attitude. Service attitude towards Krishna, service attitude towards the Vaishnavas. That we are ready to be called upon for duty or service at any moment. That is what helps us get freed from the bodily conception of life. You know, like a material example is the firefighters, firemen. They may be doing anything. A fire can happen any time of the day or night. And when someone calls them, they are there. They can't say, call us in the morning, please. It's not like that. If it's midnight, they will rush at midnight. It's the readiness, on call, as they say. All the software engineers know what on call means. No life. The buzzer was at the phone rings, and then you know that there's a problem. You have to fix it immediately. So our devotional life is not that we are going to live a life of emergencies. What it means is that our consciousness is that we are always ready to say yes to Krishna's call, whatever that call is. That mood is that we're always ready to serve the Vaishnavas and we're always ready to serve Krishna. That is what frees us from the bodily conception of life. This is Vairagya. And the benediction is that we get when we're freed of bodily conception of life, because our process is to serve Krishna, what we get is pure devotional service. This is the greatest gift any one of us can ever receive. Which brings me to a little about blessings. Here, Maitreya Rishi is giving blessings to Vidura and to everyone else who's going to hear this narration or who has heard this narration. The importance of blessings is that without... When I'm using the word blessings, you can also mentally think about the phrase that we often use called descending mercy. It's the same. Because in this section we're talking of blessings or benediction, I'm using that word. Without blessings, a conditioned living entity cannot envision or aspire for spiritual or transcendental life. Because transcendental realm is not, like last night we were discussing, is not accessible by one's effort. One can try for lifetimes together, for millions of lifetimes together, one will not approach anywhere close to the spiritual realm. And for that, one can be however superlatively intelligent, that's possible, but one cannot approach the spiritual realm. Panthastu koti shata vatsara sampragamyo vayo rathapi manaso munipungavanam sopyasti yat prapadasim avichintya tatve. Avichintya cannot, it's inconceivable. So blessings are the only medium by which the transcendental realm becomes accessible, and blessings only come from a higher source. They come down. So when we have opportunities to come across a person who carries the potency to give blessings, to not take full benefit of that opportunity is the worst mistake one can make. The worst mistake is not that there'll be a flash of lightning and strike us on the head or something. The worst mistake is that our material life will continue from one life to another life to another life, perpetually. It has been going on and it shall continue. The only way to break this cycle is when there is blessing, some intervention by a Vaishnava. So as devotees, practicing devotees, we should count our blessings, as they say. Every day. And nurture those blessings. The purpose of life is when we have received blessings, we should make it our prime goal of life to fulfill those blessings. This is our duty. When we have received blessings, to fulfill them. The blessings come in the form of encouragement. Blessing comes in the form of chastisement, comes in the form of instruction, etc. And we should fulfill them. We should be very careful, thoughtful, diligent to make those blessings come true. That is our work of life. Because most of those are related to the heart. They're not related to some habits. Every blessing is related to the heart. It is given to make the heart purer. So, when we take stock of the blessings we've received, how are we purifying our heart? That's what's our consideration. It's not about, because we're not here for becoming ritualistic. The ritual of doing this, the ritual of doing that, the ritual of... We're not here for rituals. From rituals, we don't get anything. We may get some semblance of a disciplined life, but disciplined life is not transcendental. Right? A disciplined life anyone can have. There are many persons out there in the world who are very disciplined. My favorite example is someone who's training to run the marathon. They're very disciplined. They will not eat junk food. They will exercise like anything. They will get up and train themselves for fitness, for endurance, like nobody's business. But they're not transcendental. At the end of it, what are they doing it for running 26 miles? All right, that's great. I mean, I'm nothing against marathon runners. What's the discipline for? Some people are very disciplined to look good. They should have this perfect bodily structure, supermodel. But for what? To be called a supermodel. And then when they get old, what will they look? Super what? We did this drama, Liquid Beauty. Prabhupada narrates Liquid Beauty story. There was a man who was very attracted to a woman. And he had the audacity to approach her, to accost her and say, "Oh, I would like to enjoy your beauty with you. Can you please say yes?" So she wanted to teach him a lesson. Said, "Yeah, come back in 3 days." And in those 3 days, she took enough purgatives and laxatives. So for 3 days, she was throwing up and passing loose motions, and she collected all of that in buckets. One was the vomit bucket, other bucket. She collected all nicely for him. And 3 days later, when he rang her doorbell, she opened the door. Her eyes were all sunk into their socket, and she was like this, and skin was all haggard, and she was all like that, and completely. And she said, he asked her, "Can I meet that lady?" She says, "I'm that lady." It's unbelievable. 3 days ago, you were like the supermodel. What happened to you? She said, you wanted to exploit the beauty, so I have extracted my beauty and stored it for you, so you can happily take it. And she showed him those buckets, smelly buckets. And said, "Oh, I cannot be here, I have to leave right now, and thank you very much," and he left. So she taught him that beauty is just our sense of some externality. What he was thinking as beauty is this something that is ephemeral, goes away. So back to blessings, the purpose of our execution of devotional life is to fulfill those blessings that we have received. We received many, many blessings in the form of instructions, in the form of association, in the form of encouragement. May you become a pure devotee. May you chant Hare Krishna nicely. Or please chant Hare Krishna nicely. That's a blessing, just given in a request form. When children are young, in fact, for that matter, whenever anyone seeks blessings, the best form of blessing is to say, Krishna Matirastu. May you remember Krishna always. There cannot be anything... There cannot be a blessing better than this. Krishna Matirastu. May you always remember Krishna. Because according to Rupa Goswami, it doesn't matter what we remember, what we don't remember. Certain rules we might forget, or we might remember them at the wrong time. But the mother of all rules and regulations is always remember Krishna and never forget him. So if an acharya or a senior devotee gives us the blessings, always remember Krishna. Wow. Then we should make it our life's goal to fulfill that blessing. It's not passive that I sit here and because I've received that blessing, something mystical is going to happen, and even if I don't do anything, the blessing is going to manifest. It doesn't come like that. The blessings are given as seed form, and it is our duty to nurture those seeds so they will germinate and become a fruit-bearing tree. All blessings are seeds of samskaras. And if we don't do anything about it, then they will remain dormant. So we water those blessings by our hearing and chanting and serving. And here the specific modality is given. Yashrunuyat, yashravayet. One who hears these narrations, specifically this one. In fact, for that every pastime, there is a blessing actually at the end of it. Since we are in this pastime, in this allegory, Narada Muni is saying, one who hears this again and again, and one who narrates this to others, becomes freed of the bodily conception of life. Very simple. Vairagya and bhakti, both are gifted. That is why these narrations are recorded by Vyasadeva for us. It's not like Vyasadeva wanted to write a bestseller and somehow he booked this topic. It is a bestseller, no doubt. This book is discussed even in the heavenly realms. But there is a reason. In the first canto of Bhagavatam, chapter 7, verse number 6, is described that Vyasadeva Chakre Satvata Samhita, that he put together this whole Bhagavatam because he had a purpose. The purpose was Lokasya Ajanataha, that the living entities, especially in Kali Yuga, are completely clueless of how to live their lives. So, for such clueless persons, Vyasadeva thought, what is it that's going to help them? Let me give them the blessing of Krishna's pastimes. So when they hear and narrate to each other, all their problems will be finished, finito. And then the next verse says that one who hears these narrations of Krishna is freed from lamentation, fear, and illusion. Anyway, these three come because of bodily conception of life. Same thing. Yasyam vai shruyamanayam krishne paramapuruṣe bhaktir utpadyate pumsam. The benediction is when we hear about Krishna, the heart is fully manifest with bhakti. And shoka moha bhaya apaha, the bodily conception of life goes away. How do I know I have a bodily conception of life? Why do I lament? Yes. Do I have fear and anxiety? Mm-hmm. Sure do. Am I under illusion? Oh, you bet. So to be free from that means bhakti has to awaken. Very important. So it's nice to go back to this allegory, read the details and share the details with each other. And use those details to look around. Wow, look at the gates of the body. Look at how I'm the living entity as Puranjana. I'm leaving this particular gate to enjoy that particular sense object. I'm leaving this particular gate to enjoy that sense object. It's very nice to be thoughtful like this. And catch ourselves when we escape from this particular kingdom. I forget the name of the kingdom. Puranjana's kingdom is called some Puri, some Navadware Puri, something is called. However, how are we falling prey to our contaminated intelligence? Puranjani, how she is bewildering us or giving us wrong wrong discrimination or not giving us the right discrimination in certain situations. It's nice. Then we will allow for Maitreya Rishi's benedictions to manifest. So those are some thoughts for this. Any comments, questions? Himanshu Prabhu?
Thank you very much for your class. It was very, very thoughtful. I have a question and a thought. So my question is, you were speaking about how our duty is to take the blessings we have received and try and realize them in our own devotional life. And I was thinking that for some of us, like for example, Prabhupada's example, you know, he didn't even know his spiritual master very well, but his spiritual master told him after that first meeting that, you know, go to the West and public. And he kind of held on to that blessing for the rest of his life, and then when the time was right, he fulfilled it. Similarly, I feel like I receive a lot of blessings in the form of instructions, but there's this inability to carry it out. I may be doing something that's maybe like part of my conditioned nature, and an instruction comes, and then I recognize that, oh, I shouldn't have done this or I shouldn't have said that. But so it's kind of like a dilemma, actually. Like, I don't know what to do about it or how to go about implementing those instructions in my life, even as they clash against my conditioned nature. So I was wondering if you could give some practical advice.
Sure. Generally, it is said that we learn better from hindsight. But according to our teachings, that's lower intelligence. Because we usually remember the instruction after we have messed up. Oh, I was told don't do like this. But the real method is to remember the instructions as we are entering a particular situation. Most of the time we're not awakened because we're passing through life passively. One time I heard my spiritual master tell someone in my presence or some, that even if you remember the instruction, even if you don't carry it out, just that you remember it, that itself is such a serious guard against any mistake. For example, let's say someone has an anartha or habit of speaking harshly. Okay, we could pick anything, but this one. And if the spiritual master tells the bhakta or bhaktin, don't speak harshly, or so then what are the situations in which my harshness comes out? These are the situations. If I remember the instruction, as the situation is building, the remembrance will say, don't speak harshly. That's a protection. It's a remembrance. But most of the times our way of learning is, rah! Oh, I shouldn't have said like that. Okay, that's better than not even remembering it. That's because we're moving through situations blindly or passively. Not alert. Bandhumoi savadhanamate. Savadhana is that alertness. I'm entering a situation. What does the situation look like? What are the possibilities of something that will come up? I know these patterns. And so what's the caution that's given to me? Or something easier to visualize is I'm going out for Sankirtan. Right, I got my books, got all of this, and as I'm exiting, what's the meditation? Oh, there are many persons out there, given the weather or whatever, they may be not clothed well, or they may be good looking, or frivolously enjoying. That's not my purpose. That's not what my reason for being out there is. I'm trying to be an instrument of Lord Chaitanya. Whatever is the contemplation, because these are instructions given by Prabhupada to us. That's our protection. The reference to this is First Canto, Chapter 15, when Arjuna has this difficulty. And Arjuna is defeated by the cowherd's men. And he's very surprised. How is it possible? I'm Arjuna. I have the Gandiva in my hand. And I conquered the entire Kaurava army. How can I be defeated by... Oh, I forgot Krishna's instructions. And as soon as he remembers Krishna's instruction, all of his bewilderment goes away. And he regains his full consciousness. But that's, in that case, hindsight in one sense. So that's a lesson for us, that this is what happens in the hindsight. Is that right? What the thought that you had was?
I was wondering if you could also, you were saying that amongst the devotees we should be sharing our realizations with each other, and the result should be quoted that in this verse of Gita where it says that devotees are always enlightening each other.
Right.
Enlightening each other. So, you know, the result should be that we should feel enthusiastic about our services. But I was thinking sometimes, depending on how attached we are to a certain conception, we may or may not feel so enthusiastic after the devotees have shared or we've had a discussion.
No.
When we're not so attached, we feel grateful that, oh, thank you for pointing that out, I'll correct myself. When we're pretty attached, it seems almost like you're pinching me, or why did you have to say that? You know, so, but it's not that that wasn't relevant. You needed to hear it, it's just that you're really attached. So I was just thinking that it may not always be the case that we feel very enthusiastic after a conversation. We could still feel grateful.
Yeah, Krishna says tushyanti cha ramanti cha. So it does not mean that tushyanti and ramanti are that every time someone speaks some realization that we're supposed to be bouncing off the walls. It means we get some awareness about something here, and that's the joy. Because groping in the dark is terrible. Some awareness is nice. I'm happy that I'm aware of something now. This is Krishna's mercy. Wow, I was just moving along blindly. That's the ramanti, in one sense. And for those who are sharing realizations, they shouldn't do it with the sole purpose of correcting someone else. That's not right. The purpose of sharing our realizations is to provide the other devotee with a resource. Oh, they were in a similar situation. Oh, that's how they understood the situation and that was their realization. Ah, maybe. Then it is joyful. But if it is meant for correcting and beating someone down, they will not work. They always, people feel that they've been spoken down to. Them. That should not be the purpose. Purpose is to allow for others to feel resourced. Oh, they're also in that situation, so I know that I can work out of it. Then it's uplifting for both. Oops. Anything else? Okay, thank you. Oh. This morning in Kirtan, the Mangal Arati that you sang? Oh, sweet. Can you please turn it on, please? Himanshu called you a rascal? Tushyanti cha ramanti cha. Wow. It says, Krishna says, bodhayantascha parasparam, which means you have the opportunity to return it to him. I'm joking. He calls you rascal. He calls me the same thing. He uses a different word for it, though. He calls me Godfather. Same thing. Yesterday, the first thing I saw him was I pinched his ears. Like, why were you not in class? Because we're doing it nicely. I said, Baba was washing pots. I said, Godfather's here. Yeah.
Sorry. Oh, there we go. So the purport was mentioning, and you commented on this point, that associating with Narad Muni and his servants is, what's the exact language?
When the living entity is fortunate enough to associate with Srinarada Mahamuni or his servants, he is liberated from this dreamland of material creation and the bodily conception of life.
So one thing I was kind of wondering is that in my experience, the value of my association with devotees is depending also on my regard for that devotee.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that regard comes with through the relationship, but also how I'm perceiving their advancement in Krishna consciousness.
That's the problem.
Yeah. So it seems to me, and this is probably the problem, that we would have a different regard for Narad Muni than we would have for his servants.
And that's a problem.
So then the question is, how can we have equal regard for Narad Muni and his servants when one is Narad Muni and he is an established authority for us, but then his servants may be at so many different places and we may not be able to take everything that they say as completely, I don't want to say bona fide, but like as a direct...
Yes, that is. It is a fact that we cannot have the same regard for everyone. Because some relationships are more intimate, and some are not so intimate, and some are yet to be developed. But the regard is that among the gazillions of living entities, few even are in a human form of life. Only 6 billion are. And among the 6 billion in the human form of life, few are actually thinking about the real purpose of life. And among the few who are thinking about the real purpose of life, hardly anyone is actually trying to cultivate their relationship with Krishna. This is Krishna's instruction from Bhagavad Gita, Manushyanam Sahasreshu. And if we are in their association, then we are already working with, or we should be working with a high degree of regard that not very many even turn towards Krishna. So these are very great personalities. Just because we live with them or they're close, you know, we're in proximity, we get to see certain layers of obstacles between them and Krishna. Just as we also have our layers of obstacles between us and Krishna. So it's just that they're on the path. And in due course of time, by their execution of devotional service, those layers and obstacles will be gone. Will be gone. That's my regard. Among them, I may have closer relationship where my regard is higher. Just because either by experience or by realization they've demonstrated that they're a little further ahead. But they're all accepted by Narada Muni, therefore they are great persons. And they are accepted by Narada as Narada servants, means Prabhupada has accepted those persons. Then am I judging better than Prabhupada? If Prabhupada can accept, why cannot I? The same argument that we use for the impersonalists. The impersonalists, after you describe all the glories of devotional life, they still say, no, no. We follow what Shankaracharya says. And the question is, do you say that you are more intelligent and more erudite than Prakashananda Saraswati, who had 60,000 disciples? And in one conversation with Lord Chaitanya, he understood things. Are you claiming to be more erudite than him? That's our claim usually against impersonalists. If all of these great persons, great impersonalists, can understand Lord Chaitanya's teachings, if you're saying you're not understanding or you're not willing to move from your position, you're claiming to be more knowledgeable. Similarly, if Prabhupada can accept, am I claiming subtly that somehow I can see something that Srila Prabhupada cannot see? What we should come to the conclusion is the capacity of Prabhupada's compassion is far more than my ability to be compassionate. My compassion is very selective. So there's work for me to do of expanding my sense of compassion. And I cannot expand my compassion unless I receive that compassion from Krishna, myself. And if I'm not able to be compassionate, then that's my unfortunate position. It's not their fault. That's the work we have to cultivate. At the same time, it doesn't mean we take instruction from anybody. We can get good instruction from anyone, no doubt. According to Charanaka Pandit, you can take instruction even from a fool. If he's speaking something that's proper, you can pick up gold from a filthy place, you can marry a girl even from a lower caste if she's qualified, and take instruction even from a fool if he's saying the right thing. But we verify with someone that we have trust in. I heard this. Is this relevant for me? Yes. Oh, okay. Yeah. You want to add something? Question. Okay.
Thank you. I had two questions. First of all, on the point of blessings, we often hear or we try to follow the idea, oh Prabhu Maharaj, please give me your blessings. This is kind of a one-liner attempt to get some great person, okay, give me your blessings. But how is it that actually we can, because it said, you know, serving is more a better form to get, rather than just asking, you know, and there's a story of Prabhupada. So, you know, can you comment on that approach versus a better means of getting a great soul's mercy?
Well, my first thought goes back to the fourth chapter of first canto, story of Narada Muni. He was a young boy and he very humbly served the Bhaktivedantas. He removed their Uchishta plates, you know, the plates that they'd eaten in, cleaned the place, and while they were discussing Krishna Katha, he was around. And he served them so nicely for 4 months of Chaturmasa when they were leaving. They gave him great blessings. He also received their blessings by eating the remnants of their food. But we also should ask Vaishnavas for their blessings. If we do it casually, as a matter of, you know, without thought in that statement. You know, one of the statements that we generally make without too much thought is, I'm very fallen. I'm very fallen, Prabhu. It's not thought, it's a fashionable statement. I'm under the modes of nature, Prabhu. This is, we say, this is jargon that we use. So give me your blessings if it's just jargon, then it doesn't come. But if we are, let's say, embarking on some service, whatever that is, if we come to a Vaishnava or Vaishnavas and say, please give me your blessings that as I'm doing this service, that I remember Guru and Krishna and so their pleasure. Which Vaishnava will say, no, not today, I can't give you blessings. May be happier. Please be all successful, Bhadramte. May you be successful in your preaching mission or whatever that service is. It can be as simple as I'm about to, whatever, I don't know. I'm about to dress the deities. Can you please give me your blessings? So it should be done genuinely, and there is room for asking for blessings, no doubt.
Thank you. The other question I had, it seems as aspiring devotees, for some of us more new in Krishna consciousness, one of the main roots of the bodily concept becomes exposed as if we associate with family. So I've heard many different things on that subject, and I don't know if you mind sharing something on that, but what are some principles that guide the interaction with one's family, or the souls in which one has taken their birth in that?
Yeah, there is no cookie cutter answer for this, because each person's flavor or dynamic with their family is different. So it depends what kind of relationship they have. Let's pick a few categories of things. One category is this aspiring devotee has complete aversion from their family, thinks of them as maya. To such a person, the instruction is be more gentle. Be grateful. Because if they did not give you birth, you would not be here. So don't be averse. Because what we're working with is not necessarily the family situation, but it's the state of the heart. Because when there is aversion, it's the flip side of attachment. And that's passion. That's not good. So you try to bring them to at least goodness, that there is regard and respect. So that's one category. And I'm just giving you a very capsule answer. There's another category where the persons are very neutral with their family. It's there, it's there, it's not there, it's not there. Sometimes that neutrality is a covered aversion. It's not genuine detachment. So it needs to be understood, what is it exactly, what's the issue there. If it is genuine neutrality, that's very good. You just encourage that. Then let's say there's a third category. There's so much affection for the family. One of the dimensions of that affection is that the family is highly involved in every decision that's being made. And they don't know how to say to the family, hold on a second, I'm a grown-up now and I can make my decisions. To such persons, you give instruction that's a little bit more detaching. So it depends on. So you, that's why you hear a range of things, and each person, the situation is different.
So I was just speaking with a devotee, and it's astounding how, as you pointed, the affection, the principle of where our heart goes, if it's going somewhere outside the association of devotees, our Krishna consciousness can be so seriously affected in that our ability to connect with Krishna, because our heart or our affection has been placed somewhere else. So it can be very difficult, very subtle thing that you don't catch, and then you go to do your practice. Or sometimes it's not so subtle. Sometimes it's very clear that you're in a different state of consciousness.
Correct. But as devotees, we are meant to be affectionate with every living entity. Why not parents or family? We are meant to. It is how we exchange that affection is what is the critical factor. When we are with family in the right way, I don't like to think right and wrongs, but the right way is that we are providing association. we are there to somehow or the other directly, indirectly, remotely make their contact with Krishna. However that happens. And if by being affectionate with them, that's the channel by which they can connect to Krishna, fantastic. That's the purpose for being affectionate with anyone. If the affection is, you know, it's my mommy, it's my daddy, and if it's very familial, then yes, one can get distracted. The phrase that I've heard is that we give superior association. Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses the language giving, you know, especially in Janasangha section in Bhakti Aloka. He talks about giving association versus taking association. And he talks about people have to work in, let's say, workplace, have to interact with worldly people, family, all of that. We don't become hermits and isolate ourselves. We give association. We carry the association we've received from sadhus and we give that association. That is how we interact with the worldly people. We give association. We don't take their association. Then we become insulated versus isolated. Past 8:30. Is that all right? Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.